Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call talks to the people in Charlottesville and Albemarle County who are making a difference. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And welcome, everybody. Thanks for being here. Sunday morning wake-up call has returned to the air. We've got a show today talking about COVID-19 and its effect on academics and religion each day. We are recording this show a few days ahead of time. Our first guest today for the half hour, first 30 minutes of the program, will be talking to Kathy Hinchy. Kathy is an elementary school instructional coach in Newport News in the public school system. Kathy, thanks for being with us.
Sure. Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm assuming that a lot of people have a lot of free time on their hands today. Do you qualify?
I certainly do. It's something I could write on my social calendar today. It's awfully blank.
Well, again, thanks for being with us. This is the first show that Sunday Morning Wake Up Call has done a new program since March, and we're happy to have you as our first guest since that time. So we are going to be talking about academics for the first half hour and religion with a Baptist minister in the second half hour about how the virus has affected each of those segments of life. It's just taken a toll, I would think, and reset a lot of visions. Kathy, can you tell me when it affected your job?
Well, on March 10th, we started getting an indication that schools might close. And so a lot of my job revolves around writing curriculum for the district. And so we were asked to start putting together, for lack of a better word, packets that our kids could take home with them. We had envisioned doing packets for about 2 weeks. And we were going to send the kids home with these packets, and they would, complete the packets, and then they would come back to school. But we all know that on March 13th, the governor shut all the schools down. So we were sort of caught off guard. No one really knew that it was going to happen that quickly.
Now, March 10th was a Friday. Is that correct? March 13th, a Monday?
Yes, I think. I'm not looking at a calendar, but we had started to gather the materials. We were all put into one room, all of us being curriculum writers K through 12, and we started working on these packets. And originally the plan was that the district were thinking that the kids were going to leave, and then we were going to have the teachers come back on a Monday, and we were going to have a half a day of professional development with the teachers to prepare them for what was in the packets. And so we were thinking we were actually going to have 2 days with teachers before no one came back to school. But that is not what happened. On March 13th, we were shut down. And actually, we were all in a room when we got the email from the superintendent telling us to, telling us that what the governor had declared. And so then sort of it was all hands on deck, but in a completely different way.
And that's why I don't have my calendar in front of me either, but that's why I asked if you could remember whether the 10th and the 13th or Monday, Friday, was the amount of time and preparation you were given to change plans from putting together your packets to share and hand over personally and work with other teachers or possibly see students again to, sorry, that's not going to happen that way.
Yeah, everyone was really shocked because I was in a room with some pretty high up folks in the district. I mean, supervisors and folks who regularly are in contact with the superintendent. And there was no indication that the governor was going to shut us down on the 13th so quickly. We were functioning from this place of 2 weeks, and then we would come back. And that wasn't the case. And when I say 2 weeks, you know, we thought that the kids would go home. I'm pretty sure the 13th was a Friday because the thought was the kids would go home, the teachers would come back for a half day, Monday, Tuesday. And then that didn't even happen. So it was all, it was an incredible whirlwind situation. And I probably that night, if it was a Friday, worked up until probably 6 o'clock trying to get everything done because we were told when we went home, we were going home for good.
And how did you prepare your home to be your office and do your work from home?
Well, I don't have a big house. I have a 3-bedroom rancher. I also have a son who's in high school who is also, come to find out, doing school from home. And so we have a computer. I have a laptop, and my son has a laptop. And really, for about 4 weeks, my entire family was here because my husband was also working from home. He then was considered essential and went back to work. But it's at our dining room table. There is no preparation. My house is now my office and my home. We moved the office chairs, moved the dining room chairs, and pushed the office chairs up. That's what we did.
Again, our guest today for the first half hour is Kathy Henchy, elementary school instructional coach in Newport News, Virginia, as we talk about COVID-19 and the effect on academics. So, Kathy, let's move ahead to the present. Do you feel like you're able to do your job now? Are you able to help teachers? Are you able to help students?
Well, the focus of my job has definitely switched because I really did a lot of hands-on work with our new teachers in the district and sort of helping them figure out curriculum and classroom management. And now that's sort of, I'm not going to say that it's needed because the new teacher is still trying to figure out everything. But they certainly are doing different things. You know, they don't need me. They have a principal. So I'm writing curriculum. I'm writing curriculum for the entire district, and then our teachers are then turnkeying what we write and pushing that out to their students through the mode of communication that their school has deemed what they're using.
Has the curriculum itself changed just because of the way it's being delivered?
Well, yes and no. So what you have to teach, has it changed? Because that comes from the state. The state tells you this is the standards that need to be covered within a year's time. But obviously the delivery method has changed because you don't have kids in front of you. We are in a district that does not have one-to-one devices. So that means, you know, they did the best to get devices in kids' hands who didn't have one at home, to get hotspots out in the community for kids who didn't have access to data or Wi-Fi. But, you know, I'll just pull something out of the sky, like take butterflies, for example. You know, a kindergarten student is supposed to learn that all animals have a life cycle, and they typically do that with butterflies. Well, it's, you know, usually do that by observing the change of the caterpillar into the chrysalis, and then as it emerges, and how the life cycle of the butterfly changes. And it's kind of hard to do that without a real live butterfly in front of you, but you can't put that in front of kids, you know, who are all sitting at home. So it's changed in the way that we deliver it. The lessons that I have written are Band-Aid lessons. I would not say that they are high quality, top quality lessons. We have written emergency lessons is what we've done.
Do you think that the material, the methods that it's being presented as being successful?
Well,
the homeschooling that's happening today?
I don't know about successful. I think we are stopping the drowning, but I don't think we are doing anything fabulous. You know, kids who were struggling before they left in March are still struggling. Some kids we don't have any contact with at all. We've done the best that we could to, like, figure out where they are and what's happening. Some kids are thriving in the environment because they have a stable home. They have a parent or a caregiver who is able to kind of help them, remind them, help them stay organized, and do the work. But no, I do not think that this is top quality, great teaching that's happening. I think we are in a lifeboat and we are bailing as we're sinking, basically, is what we're doing. We're just trying to stay above water. And we know that kids are going to have a huge gap when they come back. We're just trying to make sure that it's not so big that we can't get over the hurdle once we are back in the physical building.
Sunday morning wake-up call here today. Today's program, COVID-19, and how it has worked and affected two large effects of society, academics, and religion each day from March to today. First half hour, our guest is Kathy Hinchey. She's an elementary school instructional coach down in Newport News public school system. And Kathy, do you think that teachers and other educators are feeling more appreciated for the work that they usually do?
I think it depends on where you look. Social media can be a wonderful thing, or it can be a horrible thing. You know, I get that it's a high stress situation for everyone, and so I try and take everything that I have seen or heard or read with a grain of salt. Everybody's, you know, to use the cliche, this is unprecedented times. Everybody is in a high stress situation. I think that people who typically have a positive mindset are doing the best that they can, and folks who have a negative mindset or maybe picking at the process a little bit more than maybe normal because they're stressed. And I get that. This is not an ideal situation for learning. I think the one thing that it has pointed out to a lot of folks that maybe we didn't think about before is how vital our schools are in our community in terms of just people being able to go to work, kids being able to be fed, you know, social and emotional learning that kids get just from being with other children and other young adults their age. It's invaluable, and I think that we now understand that there is a high value to that. And I'm not sure we necessarily thought about it in such high regard as we do now.
We have several minutes coming up till the next break, and this is sort of a deep question, but you mentioned how in your school system not every family has a one-on-one learning device, and some other points that sounded socioeconomic. Can you talk about, and not just in Newport News, but the socioeconomic stratification and the school systems and what's going on for success and problems?
I think, you know, for you have to have your basic needs met first. So if you don't feel safe, if you're hungry, then no learning can occur. So this, you know, first off, the schools have to sort of step in and help with that. But then, you know, if you just think about, you know, Virginia has a lot of second language learners that are in our school systems. And so if you have a caregiver who doesn't speak English and is trying to help you do work from home that's in English, that can be stressful and that can be hard. And then that child is not learning the English that they need to be learning to move forward. So then you've got special ed students who are supposed to be receiving, you know, modifications through their IEPs that can't necessarily happen because they're not in the physical building. It's just, it goes on and on and on, the list of hurdles that students, no matter really of your any kind of background, but it's worse when you have your socioeconomic background sort of puts you at a disadvantage because you don't have the devices, or maybe you're a rural school system and, you know, your data, you just don't even have good, reliable internet. Those are all hurdles that here in Virginia we're having to take into consideration as the Department of Education, the Virginia Department of Education, makes suggestions for how we go forward and helped guide the decisions that were made, you know, up until this point. No school system made a decision to do anything without the guidance of the VDOE. So we were given three choices as to how to, you know, how we were going to tackle learning, and every school district got those three choices.
Our guest today, Kathy Hinchy. She's an elementary school instructional coach in the Newport News public school system. Our first show since March. Kathy, thank you for being our first guest. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back for our last 10 minutes with Kathy. In the second half hour of the show, we'll be talking about religion with Baptist minister Tyler Daniels. But let's take our break and then come back for the last 10 with Kathy and talk about the future as Kathy sees it, along with others in the public school system. Be right back. And we're back Kathy Hinchey's here from Elementary School System in Newport News, Virginia. Kathy, we're talking about, we've moved on to the future of the public school system as best can be seen under the COVID-19 virus. And that's a question that I'm not sure anyone can truly answer. Certainly a lot of people in the United States and around the world who have different visions of how we should proceed. But I'm curious about your visions of the elementary schools and the public school system in the fall of 2020.
Well, I think that there will be, and of course this is Kathy Hinchey's opinion, but I think we'll probably see a staggered schedule where possibly kids come at a different time, like an A-B schedule. Maybe kids come half a day and then go home for the other half and then a new set come in, or a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday, Thursday, and then that flip-flops the following week. Because part of the problem is that if we're still having to maintain this 6-foot social distance, that's very hard to do in a classroom because classrooms are only so big. And so that's something that I think is a real just physical space issue that there's no getting around. They can't build a bunch of new schools.
I would think that's especially difficult for elementary school children. Who might not get the concept of you can't walk up and hug your friends.
Right, or, you know, it's just especially young kids who just put everything in their mouth and they're wiping, you know, their nose on their hand. You know, just those basic social skills that are taught to young children. You know, you blow your nose, you wash your hands.
We've introduced you as the instructional coach, but you spent a number of years as a kindergarten and first grade teacher, correct?
Yes, yes.
So you're familiar with that grade level. You're not just talking about it.
Right. I don't know. That's the part that's so hard to just even conceive how it would look. It wouldn't surprise me if teachers will be expected to maybe wear a mask or even, I mean, I can't see teachers wearing protective clothing, but I can see where maybe, you know, you're like kids won't eat lunch in the cafeteria. And
well, Kathy, didn't the Newport News superintendent speak on this topic?
He did, and he was just talking about some things that he was trying to think about in terms of, like, you know, all right, so we have to install plexiglass in places, you know, in our offices and in our cafeterias when, you know, if a child is going to come and get a lunch, you know, that's already been pre-plated. Just like the buses, you know, how do you transport kids back and forth? You know, you can't expect a parent or a caregiver to transport a child to school every day. I mean, that's not going to happen. People have to work. But you can't put kids, you can't cram kids on a bus. And there's, you know, now you're talking about added fuel and added buses, and it creates this huge rabbit hole that you end up going down when you start thinking about all the things that need to be done. And so the superintendent was just talking about these are things that we're starting to think about. And we, you know, were waiting for guidance. We have gotten a little bit of guidance from the CDC about, you know, what it might look like, but I'm glad I'm not in a decision-making position. I do know that.
We've got about 4 minutes left with our guest today, Kathy Hinchey. elementary school instructional coach down in Newport News, Virginia, as we talk about COVID-19 and the academic side of things. Kathy, one of the things that seems to have changed is the uniformity of testing. And by testing, I'm talking about academic testing, state and nationwide. But if the individuality of schools and school systems and students and homeschooling with families is changing on ways to handle the crisis, do you think that SATs and SOLs are going to continue or change?
I sure hope so. again, that's my opinion, but I sure hope so. I hope that this will, again, shine a light on the fact that we should really be focusing on progress of where a child starts and where they end up, as opposed to this standard, you must meet this benchmark kind of thing. You know, when you think about SATs, too, you know, a lot of colleges will say, oh, well, we look at more than the score. We look at the whole student. But do you really? If on your website it clearly says, you know, here is the range of SAT score that our students get. So a student who, you know, let's say scores 1,000 on an SAT is probably not even going to consider applying to a school like the University of Virginia or William & Mary because historically a student with 1,000 SAT would not get in, even though that child, the whole child, might be an excellent candidate for that university. So I think there are better ways for us to figure out what a kid knows and if they're going to be a viable student on our campus than these standardized tests. We've got so much technology now. We can submit videos and we can submit portfolios of our work that we couldn't do in the past. I think that would be a really exciting thing to come out of all of this if we could get to that place.
Last minute with Kathy Henschy. Kathy, do you see any positives on the academic side of things to come from the virus?
I do. It has pushed school systems to look at how they can move into a virtual learning situation and do it well. We have not done it well. People who are teaching virtually from home, e-learning, electronic learning. But what it has done is it has said we need to get smarter so that this, if this happens again, and what we're being told is it probably will, we'll be ready and it'll be better than what it is now and not be a Band-Aid.
That's Kathy Henschy. She's an elementary school instructional coach down in Newport News public school system. After multiple years as a kindergarten through first grade teacher. Kathy, thank you so much.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. And thanks to all those parents out there who are dealing with teaching from home. We appreciate what you're doing.
Take care.
Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. We're going to continue the second half of the show with our guest, Tyler Daniels. He's a minister at the Piney Fork Baptist Church in Gretna, Virginia. And welcome, Tyler. How are you today?
Rick, I am well. I am grateful to get the chance to talk with you today, and thank you so much for inviting me back.
Well, yes, you were with us in September of 2019, and I felt very fortunate to have you on. That was a wonderful hour with you. People can find that at the SeavillePodcast.com. That was a great conversation. I hope people will take time to look that up. And I'm feeling fortunate to have you to continue the conversation in this hour. We've titled the show COVID-19 Academics and Religion in Each Day. So let's move on to the religion part. Tyler, I'm curious, can you give us just a minute or so on your basic ministry routine before COVID-19 changed things? Did you have a regular schedule aside from the traditional Sunday mornings that people think about?
Well, back in those days, which seemed like an eternity ago, we really had the rhythm of life mastered. I think everybody might have felt that way. But we had our routines for our times of worship. I have my own personal working routines, whether it's the time spent for study or for caring for our folks. Our family had some tent poles that were marked out on the calendar. And everything clicked along until March, and then things changed.
Did you, but you have Sundays, right? Sunday mornings, when many people think of the minister, you see him on Sunday mornings, and unless you have great need for some other reason to see the minister, what else does the minister do? When else is the minister at church or seeing a parishioner or his congregation? What else was on your calendar on a weekly basis?
So I sometimes advertise myself as the most boring man alive because things are really very routine in my world. I learned from some great pastors who taught me so much, not just about proclaiming the truth of God's word to people on Sunday morning, but also to really care for folks. And one of the things they showed me was how to get a rhythm doing that. So, for instance, in my world, Tuesdays are almost always spent communicating, emails, text messages, phone calls, organization. Wednesdays, because I know we'll be back with our people for a time of Bible study, I go out and I see all of our homebound members, folks who can't make it into the church on a regular basis, whether they're in nursing care or they're at home. And I go and check in on them personally and take time to just visit and pray and share with them what's going on in their church. And then Thursday is a time, again, of increased study as well as some organizational things. And then Fridays I write. I take the whole day Friday to be ready for Sunday. So it's study and writing and preparing. And then Sunday comes, which is really, that's the ground that we stand on. Everything is built around Sunday, the way that we worship and the way that we stay organized as a church. And keeping with the routine, I used to have Mondays as what I called family day. I would take the day deliberately off from every task that I could let go of and spend time with Mindy and with our daughters, Esther and Miriam. And we would just enjoy time together as best we could and get some chores done. And all of that flowed pretty well. Of course, the flow has changed now.
So what is your routine now?
Well, that's where we get into some really kind of murky space, because routine has been elusive in these weeks. As a church, we have been closed for regular services since March the 15th. We closed really kind of on the leading edge of this pandemic. And after that, every day became a matter of ministry invention. And every day in the home became a matter of how do we navigate the girls' education as well as times of rest as well as the things that we need to accomplish. And so for a long time now, almost daily, there have been surprises. We have had to create entire new ways of serving our church. And even though our girls were already home educated, we began tweaking the schedule and reformatting some things because they lost all their activities. And so now there isn't a really clear routine. In case you were curious, I know you were, we still do all of the laundry on Mondays. Okay, so Monday is still laundry day. But besides that, everything else, I have done the ministries for the church at all different times. I have recorded Sunday messages in the middle of the week. I have done live messages on Facebook on Sunday evenings and on Monday evenings. We started using an automated phone call system to send devotional content to our people. I call it One Good Minute with Pastor Tyler. And they get a recording from me three times a week. Just a quick hit, something to think about, something to keep us together. But all of that stuff happens all over the map. You know, we're doing different things now, different days. And I can't go see my people in person. That's the one that gets me. I can't go on Wednesdays and sit with some of our elderly folks whom I love and have developed these friendships with. And now we have to settle for the phone, but the phone is a much different thing than being there in person. One of my favorite things that we've invented, if you've got a moment for me to describe it, is trying to see our people personally. We created a way of serving together on Sundays, and we do a drive-through ministry. I know a lot of churches have done drive-ins, and that's pretty cool, where people drive in and maybe they can tune into the radio and hear a pastor speak. We do a drive-through where we run two lanes like Chick-fil-A, and it gives folks the opportunity to receive material from us, whether it's Bible study or just communication. It gives them a chance to bring their tithes and their offerings so they can still give faithfully through their church. But then they come to me, and I get 5 or 8 minutes with each pair of cars. And so I'll have about 10 different congregations on any given Sunday, and I'll get them for about 5 minutes, 7 minutes, where we can pray together and I can share with them a thought from God's word. And that's been one more way we've just tried to be in this thing together. But that was another matter of pure invention. What do we do? How can we be together? Well, let's try that.
Amazing. It's amazing what force of change can bring about in conception to do so and different ideas that pop up. Our guest today, Tyler Daniels, he's the minister down in Gretna, Virginia for the Piney Fork Baptist Church. We talk about religion and how COVID-19 has become part of every day and what it's done to change every day. Tyler, we've got about a minute and a half before we take our next break. How much time did you have to put these changes into place in your house, taking your work from the church to your house?
Well, we were blessed by a few things. My main office is actually here in the house, so that makes things easy. And we had already, over the years, accumulated a lot of tools that we can use. And so we just repurposed them all. Our camera from the sanctuary, I use at home. All of our web space, we just reformatted and started pushing out these new kinds of material. We only had, 10 minutes to get all this stuff done. We were actually supposed to be on vacation that first Sunday when we were closed. And instead of vacating, we stayed home and immediately started ministering. And so we tried to solve everything as fast as we could. And what we learned is that where we started was not where we were going to finish. Things are much different now after 8 weeks or 9 weeks of doing this. But that's how we got rolling pretty quick.
And this is our second break of the day. We'll be right back with Tyler Daniels. He's the minister at the Piney Fork Baptist Church down in Gretna, Virginia. All right, and here we are back with our guest, Minister Tyler Daniels. Tyler, tell me, do you feel as though being more online and, I'll say, more 21st century fits your traditional style and the style of your church and your parishioners?
What I have noticed over this stretch of time, and it's been apparent in the church before, but now it's really kind of glaring. Sometimes the way that we serve here in a rural church with a young pastor, it feels like we almost have two churches at the same time. We have a core of people who have been in our church forever. They'll tell you the stories of their grandparents and what they did in this church. And these are folks who are, even today, not as young as they used to be. And at the same time, we've got another group of folks who maybe it's some younger families or it's folks who have caught on in the time that I've been here. And they're much more tuned in. They've got their smartphones. They are ready to be on Facebook and other social media. And what we've seen is as we have served over the years, we've sort of had to figure out how do we bring those together and still proclaim the one truth that matters. Like the gospel doesn't change. The good news of Jesus rescuing us from sin doesn't change. But how do we proclaim it in a very old-fashioned Southern gospel way, as well as a contemporary social media way? What we've done now is try as best we can to bring as many people over to some of the more contemporary avenues that we have, but that's been hard. So we have been not only releasing things live on Facebook and elsewhere, but we've also been taking those recordings and producing DVDs. We even had to take some of our elderly folks and make sure that they had a DVD player so that we could deliver them the discs. And so we've tried to navigate getting these things right for everybody. And I don't know how it's going to change the church long term. We're still only just beginning to talk about reopening. And I really don't know what it's going to look like when we get together. Are we going to be more technological or are we going to be about the same? Are people going to have liked what we have done, or are they going to say, can we please go back? And so we're very curious what comes next.
Well, so do you, with your more traditional, or I shouldn't use that word, with your more elderly parishioners who, I guess I'll use the word, you may not, from a rural area may have a more traditional background on how things are done. Mm-hmm. Do you get any feedback on their thoughts on the governor not allowing folks to go to church?
I think that sometimes, and this has surprised me during this time as well, we look at the rural church, you know, and we are that. We are a country church in Pennsylvania County. And we're tempted to think that we sort of have either, you know, groupthink or just the perspective is monolithic. And maybe as far as certain political perspectives, you can get away with that. But what I've noticed with this particular topic, now I can't speak to how they feel specifically about Governor Northam and his executive orders and the guidance he's giving the state, but I can say that the level of comfort with what should be open and what should be closed and when we should be wearing face masks and when it might be okay not to. These things it's a really varied perspective through the church. I have heard from folks that I would have guessed would be so eager to be back in the building, they would not have cared about precautions. And I've been wrong. We'll talk about it. And they're actually very concerned. I have spoken with others who I thought would be the voices of abundant precaution. And they're looking at me kind of shrugging and saying, do we really need to do that? And so as we've tried to follow what the governor has said, and he's given us some clear guidelines, we can reopen as of now, actually, so long as we don't exceed 50% capacity, so long as we follow physical distancing guidelines, so long as we participate with other recommendations. But we can reopen now, and we've got folks who really are not so eager to be back yet, which really surprised me. I thought that in our church, we would be the kind of folks who would just jump to be back. I think precaution is a good thing. Watching how our folks have responded, there is not a spirit of recklessness in our church. There is, however, a spirit of faithfulness. They want to be back in the building, worshiping the Lord. But they're not willing to abandon the care of others while we're doing that. And so we're trying to find a way forward. It's not as clear or as monolithic as I might have presumed.
How are you with your job as a Baptist minister or any minister really handling such standard ministry tasks as a funeral or being with someone who's ill?
I have watched others, you know, we don't really call each other colleagues because obviously every denomination, every congregation is its own distinct thing. But watching others who are called to this kind of ministry, and I've seen some of the difficulty they have had to walk through. By God's grace, and it is only by grace, our church has not felt the sting of loss during this season. So we have not had to walk with a family through those grieving days when they can't be together. And so I'm grateful for that, but I've watched others have to do that. And it's immensely difficult, and we're answering the questions all different ways, whether we have a service now and plan for a larger remembrance later. Those things are all being handled, you know, church to church. Some of the other sort of everyday ministerial tasks, though, are quite a bit more challenging. We have folks who go to the emergency room. We've had folks who have had surgeries, and I can't rush to be there. I'm usually perfectly willing to stride into the hospital, wear my little badge with my credential, and be directed to a pre-op room or wherever, and take time to pray and encourage folks and share with them the good news of Jesus before they take that next step. I can't do that right now. Whether it's cancer surgery or an emergent circumstance, I'm locked out, which is really hard. And a phone call and a text message just doesn't quite get there. It's better than nothing. But these are the things that have been probably the hardest. We can be nimble when it comes to how we worship and communicate God's word. But the care of souls requires such a personal touch that it's really hard to do right now. But God has been faithful. We've had ways that we still can connect, even if it feels meager. It's not nothing.
Has there been any notes or leadership from the Baptist faith, either regionally or nationally, during this time?
Well, as the old saying goes, anywhere where you get three Baptists together, you'll have four opinions. And so depending on which flavor of Baptist you are, you're probably hearing different things. And I see it on social media with my friends. We're kind of scattered across denominational relationships. And there's different things being said. As a member of the Southern Baptist Convention of Virginia, I've been very grateful for the leadership of our executive director, Dr. Brian Autry. He has, and the entire staff and ministry team at our state-level convention, they have constantly kept us up to date with the governor's specific guidance for churches. They have given us resources. They have put us on the phone with some of the best-known coaches and leaders in the world so that we can know what best to do in our churches. So in our denomination, we really have been encouraged. Ultimately, every decision comes down to us. We believe that the Bible shows us that churches are autonomous, that we can cooperate to accomplish the greater things of God's kingdom. But ultimately, what each church does is up to each church as it follows Jesus and prays for his leadership. And so that's why you have different churches making different choices. That's why you have different denominations making different choices. But here in Virginia, our denomination that we belong to has really been a help to us. But the decision-making, which now it's time for the decision-making, it really does come down to what Piney Fork Baptist Church wants to do. And so we are praying and thinking and talking a lot.
Again, our guest today in the second half hour is Tyler Daniels. He's the minister at the Piney Fork Baptist Church in Gretna, Virginia. Tyler, we're down to about our last 6 minutes. We've got a handful of questions here about the future under the COVID-19 concerns. Do you think that something like COVID, as we are currently understanding it, is going to increase the number of churchgoers, whether out of belief or even fear, or it's going to reduce the number because of the loss of routine attendance, and not necessarily just in your church.
I was just talking with one of our people today and kind of putting it out there. I'm really interested when we come back to see who the church is, because I do think it's going to change. I think some folks will, again, out of precaution, probably want to stay home, and I get that. And if you are safer at home, then regardless of what measures we're taking, you should be there. You should make sure that you have followed the advice of your doctor and make sure that you're doing the right thing. So I don't know if we're going to have some folks who are going to migrate into not a homebound relationship, but a stay-at-home relationship. At the same time, I am confident, based on just my own personal window into the world, I am confident that there are people who are putting down deeper roots in the faith now than maybe they have in many years, whether it's their engagement with the Bible, their time spent viewing messages from pastors, whether it's me or someone else. And so if my little window is showing me that just where I am, I'm also pretty confident that in the wider culture, I really think we're going to see an increase in, I can't speak for the faithfulness of attendance, but I think as far as faithfulness to the truths of the Christian faith, I think we're going to see a bump. I think people are going to re-engage, and that's a gift of God. I think God has been speaking in these unique moments in history. I've read recently that as many as 100,000 new dedications in faith have been made through online ministries, a lot of that coming through larger churches, whether it's Life Church or another church that has a huge online presence, but also just in the local church. People are hearing that the message is getting out, and that hearts are being turned around, and that people are feeling renewed in God's grace and in the truth of his word. And my hope is that that is building up hope in them, and that we'll see them worshiping together very soon.
All right, so we got a little over 3 minutes for two questions here. All right.
Okay.
Your biggest concern for going forward into fall and winter of 2020?
I think my biggest concerns are the biggest concerns that everybody has, which is there's still a lot we don't know. And I'm glad we don't know in some ways, because we're never certain of the things that will threaten us or challenge us in this life. Look, this world is fundamentally broken. Illness and death are our reality and have been from the first people onward. But because we can't answer all the questions about this specific thing, I think it's hard to answer the questions about down the road. It really is going to be an ongoing sort of daily matter of invention, which the good news is we're getting used to that.
Well, so then I'll follow up with this, because it seems like for someone such as yourself, for someone in your field with what you've chosen to do, you have a view toward positives. So what are the positives that are going to come from this?
The positives are, I think a lot of folks are going to have a rekindled appreciation for things that matter. So many things that don't matter have now been stripped away from us. Distractions and things that we'd run around and do and ways that we would avoid, whether it's conflict or whether it's just dealing with some of the strain in our own homes. A lot of those things have been removed from us. And now we can really get a firm grip on those things that are foundational. We can really get a firm grip on our families, make sure that we are loving each other well, make sure that we're showing grace to one another. We can also take this time to really get rooted in matters of the faith. You have more time now and more resources now than ever to be in God's word and to hear it proclaimed through a local church pastor or through somebody on a bigger stage. And I think also it's going to cause folks to be better stewards of what God has placed in their hands, whether it's their money or their things or their time the way they work. I think we're all going to have a renewed perspective on managing what we have. And I think that's for our good. I think that if folks can do those things with excellence, I think they'll reap the blessings that come from that.
And where do you find, how do you find that positive view on things on a daily basis?
Well, I spend time daily in God's Word. I'm encouraged by those who are brighter than I am as they teach me. But honestly, there's a psalm that I memorized earlier this year, and I've continued to let it refresh me. I keep asking for God to restore the joy of his salvation to me and to sustain me by giving me a willing spirit. And you know what? If you've got joy because you're freed from guilt, if you've got joy because you have found truth and hope in Jesus, and if you ask God for a willing spirit to face the challenges of the day, you can make it. God is good that way.
All right. Tyler Daniels, Piney Fork Baptist Church down in Gretna. Thank you, Tyler.
It has been my privilege. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC-LP, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Engineering assistance was by Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SeavillePodcast.com. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC-LP Charlottesville.